This is the second tape. This is Judith Marti
and Danny Montoya.
Okay.
So anyway, Elizabeth and I just marched past the secretary into Chief Blackwell's office.
Uh-huh.
And they were shocked. They didn't know what to do. And of course, we had our buttons on, so they obviously knew who we were.
Mm-hmm.
And we demanded that the cops stop harassing us. And he says, well, I don't suppose you have any officers' names or badge numbers. And we said, yes, we do, and here they are. And he said, I don't suppose you have the numbers of the patrol cars. And we said, yes, we do, and here they are. He says, well, I don't suppose you have any pictures of this. And we says, yes, we do. Yes, we do, and here they are. And we also have copies prepared to send to the Sacramento Bee and the Fresno Bee and to the San Francisco Chronicle. And so we were requesting that the cops stop harassing us, and they did from that point on. They stood their distance, and we never had any problems with them. But, I mean, when I think back on that now, I mean, God, you know, I don't know if I have the nerve to do that now. I mean, that was really...
You came along.
That really took a lot of courage to walk in there. But,
yes.
I mean, we had such this sense of righteousness, mm-hmm. you know, that it never occurred to us that we couldn't do this.
And you also had now the tools because you knew what to do.
Somewhat, you know.
Wow.
But, you know, crazy stuff, you know, just crazy stuff.
What about the union now? What's going on with the union now?
I don't know if I'm anyone to speak to that because I have, since Caesar's death, you know, have had very little contact. It's always been my intention to go back up to La Paz because that's one of my homes, too,
mm-hmm.
and to visit with Helen and see Kathy and Tehachapi. My son Scott probably has done more networking that way.
Mm-hmm. Is he involved in the union?
No. He is a co-producer for, or producer for Paul Rodriguez Productions.
Right.
He works for Paul in Los Angeles now. That was my older son.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of one night at La Paz after a meeting, and again, mm-hmm. it was about 1 o'clock, and you know how stars can only be on a summer night in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
We walked out of the administration building, and there was a handful of us, and we were standing around the cars in the parking lot, and Alfredo Vasquez was a very handsome, handsome man who played guitar, you know, was a bodyguard, did anything that he was asked to do. He played guitar, and Jessica Gouveia, who was living at that time with Marshall Gantz,
mm-hmm.
Had the most beautiful voice in the world. And I will always remember standing under those stars, and he playing and she singing Guantanamera.
Mm.
It was the most beautiful thing. I mean, so in all this pain and stuff
mm-hmm.
that went on, and people that got killed, and...
Mm-hmm.
petty crap that happened between people and the struggle and all the hard work and everything. There were vignettes, you know, wonderful, wonderful things that you remember.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was just perfect. I mean, it was just absolutely beautiful. Any more questions?
Are you getting tired?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
I was wondering also.
This is like an outlet for me because I very rarely talked about this. I thought I'd be an old lady in my rocking chair talking to my grandchildren or great-grandchildren about this. I never expected to be talking about this early in my life. Oh, I know the other thing that I wanted to address. Yes, very much so. And I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. Since Caesar's death, you know, we tend to focus on him. And appropriately so. But I think one thing that really needs to be recorded for posterity, that there was another person alongside him for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
There was another person who in the 1930s started a strike. And they held out for a while, but they were called communists, and maybe they were. And they were beaten. And their movement was broken, and who started, and who never stopped organizing, and who came along about parallel with Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
But this was for the Filipino brothers, and his
mm-hmm.
name was Larry Itleong.
Mm-hmm.
And they were co-directors of the organizing committee. They combined the names of NFWA and Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, and it became UFLOC. They combined the two names, and they worked side by side for many, many years, and then they had some sort of ideological difference, and Larry retired, and then he died within a few years after that. Mm-hmm. I always loved Larry. Larry called everybody brother and sister. Mm-hmm. Larry always had this great smile on his face. He was very strong, very firm, but there was this gentle soul inside of all of that. Philip Veracruz, another Filipino brother, Pete Velasco, who I consider one of my best friends, and has that same presence, that same charisma. What happened for the Filipino brothers? They were brought over as contract laborers from the Philippines in the 30s. They were put in labor camps. And in those years, probably up to fairly recent times, there were miscegenation laws in many states, and California was one of them. And they could not date, they could not marry non-Filipinos. And they had no money to bring their families over here. They were enslaved to the contractors. They lived in these squalid labor camps. They never married, a lot of them. Because who were they going to marry? There was no one to marry. The women were not brought over. And so one of Caesar's dreams, you know, was 40 acres, which in Agabani Village, which was to be a retirement center for these men who were getting up in years. And I don't think there's very many of them left. I heard at the funeral there were only two of them left, one of which would have to be Pete Velasco.
I'm glad you brought this up, because actually Kent has gotten in touch with some who are left, and maybe just the handful you're talking about, who are living in a nursing home and were invited to come and felt they were too old and infirm, but are very willing to be interviewed, and they will go up and interview
they
them.
They should be, because
that's such an important part of this movement.
And very early on, you know, in trying to organize
I'm sorry they couldn't be here, but they're very old.
Pete himself has been battling colon cancer for a number of years now, and he eventually married an ex-nun, and they're just perfect for each other. Oh, God, they're wonderful. They're just wonderful. And Pete was a foreman for Jack Pandel. And a lot of Larry's friends, you know, they would call to him out in the fields and say, "Brother Pete, how can you betray us like this? How can you betray your people, you know?" And he said that, God, he started feeling so guilty, you know. And then one day he walked out and he gave his life to the Union, and he never wavered. Never looked back. He had worked for Jack Pandel for 25 years. You know, talk about sacrifice.
Yes.
I saw where he lived out in the labor camp, you know, when I first came to Delano, and it was one of the nicest places, and it was horrible. You know, it was really horrible. Pete Velasco could tell you so much, so much. Here was another person that became the fundraising vice president for a national union. I mean, you know, well, Pete could tell you so much about the miscegenation laws and things that happened to his friends. I wish I could remember the names of more of the Filipino brothers, because they're the ones who fed us. They're the ones that, there's a story in this book about some students who were on their way to the peace march, and somehow they got behind schedule, and they, instead of getting to Delano at 6 o'clock and stopping and resting and eating at Filipino Hall, it was more like 11 o'clock at night when they finally got there. And they were amazed that these people who they knew very little about that were helping, and they were just beginning to find out, you know, about what the farm workers were and everything. The Filipino brothers lined up on both sides of the driveway when these buses came in and were applauding them. And they couldn't believe it, you know. And they would always welcome us, and whatever food they had, they shared with us, you know. And I was very privileged that Pete took me to someone's home. I've been in Larry's home lots of times, you know, and where they actually dug holes in the ground and they barbecued goat for a couple of days, and you know, and just, but we were laughing. Hello. We were laughing about the flypaper hanging over us as we were eating, you know, watching.
I'm here somewhere. Okay, you want me to wait then? And
yeah, just
let me
on,
put on the stop.
I remember at Friday night meetings, you know, sometimes Caesar's mama, Juanita, would come down, and my, how she loved to dance.
Ugh.
Oh, she loved to dance. And I think there's a picture in this book somewhere of them, him dancing with her. And gosh, she always made me feel so, here, there it is. And she always made me feel so nice. So, you know, like I belonged, you know. Shoot, I'm looking for this quote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since my origins were Robert Kennedy, when I talked to the students the other day, there was something that I had to say. There was a point to this, and I want to give you two quotes of his, and I'll have to read it because I don't know them by heart, but... There's a picture here in the memory book of when Caesar went to jail in Salinas and the crowds gathered down in the courtyard. And the caption that we picked for that was, "Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance."
Mm.
The other quote that goes along with that from Robert Kennedy was that, "And all of us will be ultimately judged on the effort we've contributed to building a new world society and the extent to which our ideals and goals have shaped that effort."
That's
and
right.
I think that...
That really speaks.
That kind of encapsulizes... what I feel went on there. But my point in reading this to the students that we visited with is, don't think that you as an individual can't make a difference. If it's nothing more than helping someone across the street or directing someone, you know, to an agency where they can get help, or maybe going out and become a voter registrar, all you have to do is go down to the registrar's office and take a 2-hour class, and you're enfranchising people to their vote, you know. And if you want to get more deeply involved, but don't think that one man can't make a difference. Look at Caesar's example. Look at the example of all of us who came to it with whatever talents we had, you know, whether they were small or whether they were large. I feel that we did make a difference. It's a full-fledged union now. It's not an organizing committee anymore. It's different now. The rules are different. The game is different. People ask, you know, what do you think the union's dead now that Caesar's dead? And Caesar said, if I die and the union dies, then I've been a failure. And I think there are people who will carry on the movement, whether it's within the farm workers or whether it's the people that are out organizing other things or just being kind in traffic, you know? I mean, we can contribute. And one person put together with all the other one persons become those concentric circles that really have power and really have force. And I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but one thing I remember about Dolores is, you know, going to these things and people were screaming, Chicano power, this kind of power, that kind of power, and she would always quietly turn to me and say, "People power, sister, people power." So I think each of us are, in our own way, we're able to make a contribution. Oh, another little story off the side, and I'm proud of this. When we came back to San Jose, my son was in seventh grade, and I think this happened either in seventh or eighth grade when they were just beginning to tell about the grape strike and the farm workers' movement in the California history books. And Scotty had a teacher who was trying to teach this to the class, and really didn't have a lot of background on it, and she would make mistakes, and this little kid would correct her.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally got really fed up with it, you know, and she mm-hmm. told him to shut up and sit down. And they turned to the next page in the book, and there was the picture of the signing of the contract in Delano, and Big John Guamara, and this little kid standing behind Big John with the peace sign right behind his head. And Scott picked up the book, and he laid it on her desk, and he pointed at his picture and said, "And who do you think this is?" And from then on, she never gave him any problem about it. You know?
What a wonderful story.
Yeah, so... I don't know if we're through or not, or
well, we can, if you can. I think this is fine,
yeah.
And it's just a beginning.
All right.
It's just a beginning.
We've
and thank
only
you
just begun.